Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Winter Federal.
Swammerheist.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million shekels.
Aldi. Million. Rubli.
Tribe.
Scheibe Tortelle.
Ship.
Tribe.
Hello everyone and welcome to RJP's coverage of Survivor South Africa Champions. I'm your host Shannon Gus, here alone today for a couple of deep dives. First up, I will be talking to second runner-up Sivu about his game, and everyone who listened to the coverage knows I'm a big fan, so that was really, really fun. And then about an hour and 24 minutes in, you will hear me talking to Buchle about her second place game. We did not get to see enough of that on the screen, so amazing to get some insights there. Just me today, Mike Bloom and I did release the deep dive of the winner, Graham, a few days ago, so I hope you've checked that out. And Mike will be back talking to Xavion and Marion later in the week by himself, so keep an eye out for that. But these were some very fun chats today, and at this point I'm honored to have spoken to the whole final three about their incredible games of the season that I love so much. So check out both deep dives right now, and I will see you on the other side. Sivu, thank you so much for coming onto RHAP to talk about your game. I'm such a huge fan and I'm so excited to talk to you.
Oh man, thank you, Shannon, for having me. So exciting. It's been a long time. You guys just you made me travel down back to memory lane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure, like, for us it's so real and you're exactly the person you were 7 years ago, and for you we're trudging up a lot of stuff that happened a very long time ago, but this exit interview is way too late, but I'm glad we're finally doing it.
Totally. I'm happy as well.
It's a strange thing for me as well, because in my mind, like, you're younger than me. You're that, like, young guy kind of thing. And I know you just had a birthday. You're actually older than me, but I see you as who you were 7 years ago. That's the person I know.
Yes, and that's the person that I am that you watched at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I just had a birthday. What was it now? Has it been? Oh. It feels like 2 days ago, because it's been in South Africa. We hear, oh no, I think it's the whole world starting up. It's the Easter weekend.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So it's been the long weekend. So it feels like it was yesterday. It's been one long weekend birthday as well. I'm 31 now. I was like, when we shot the show, I was 23 years old.
Right.
But when it aired, I turned 24 while it was playing on TV.
Right.
So for the finale, I was 24 already, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's like a big jump, like, especially me, from like 23 now to 28. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So
it is. Yes.
Really jumped ahead in time with you. But to go back 7 years ago, you know, you were the super fan and you talked a lot about your fandom on the show. Can you talk about your experience with Survivor before you went on and being a fan of the show?
Yeah, totally. I got exposed with Survive. We have SABC 3 in South Africa. So what they do is they usually play the American Survivor series, but they play it like 3 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So season one is playing like three. And so I started watching that on TV. And that was only because of my friend in varsity as well. She was like, she loves the show, and I didn't see why would I watch people on an island just talking and text stepping each other? I watched like a few episodes and I was hooked. Yeah. And I think it was James.
Mm-hmm.
The season with James. Yeah. He was voted out with an idol.
Yeah.
That was the season. But then I went back. I watched Boston Rob and all of them. I went back to other seasons while I was in university. I watched them on my laptop and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I became a huge fan, and that's how I was exposed to it. It was a local TV station that played reruns of old Survivor series from America, and I just loved it. I loved the concept. I loved the dynamics and the unpredictability.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like a reality show with smart people for the most part. And
yes.
I liked that as well. It was appealing to me.
Yeah, discovering that you guys had only just watched the Russell Hance era when you were filming was like one of my favorite discoveries probably of doing the podcast, because we were like, Russell's being mentioned a lot. And then we realized that South Africa tends to put on earlier seasons and be a little bit behind. That was why he was such a big part of the season. But Yes. Within all that fandom, obviously getting on the show must have been a thrill. What was your process of applying for the show, and how did that all come about?
I was in University of Cape Town at the time. So what I did was I went home during the weekend and I saw an advert on TV. It was an advert on TV, like auditions are open. And mm-hmm. usually from season one until season five, our season, I mean, there was a big gap between seasons in South Africa, unfortunately. So I was shocked when I saw that advert. I was like, I'm going. And it was, coincidentally, it was close to where I stayed in uni. The auditions were held close to me, so I walked to the auditions. But the day before, I actually twisted my ankle playing soccer. When I went for my auditions, my ankle was swollen, and I had to walk at like 4 a.m. in the morning, and there were already like hundreds of people on the line waiting. It was you just pop in for the audition. It was not like you apply online or anything like that. So that was nice. So I could just pop in and went there, and it was a series of interviews, really. And they wanted to know who we were, where you from, and if they pretty much liked who you were and what you were about. And I think at that stage, they were really looking for the fans of the show for our season. I think that was the focus, because I think you'll find from our season that there were quite a few of us who were super fans of the show.
Yeah, it did seem that way. Being a fan of the show, obviously arriving on the beach, you know that you're not used to having captains who don't play the game. So in yes. that fandom, what were your thoughts on having these captains as the theme?
Oh, my word, that was stressing. they asked me during my interviews, which one would you choose? And I chose Gone. I chose Gone because I used to watch a little bit of rugby as well when I was young. But I played soccer because I grew up in the township. So that's what we do. That's the first thing you do, play soccer. So I knew of Mark Fish earlier before I knew Gone. But as I grew, I watched quite a bit of rugby, and I liked Gone. And what I liked about him, not because he was a nice guy, I liked the way he played. He was a really rough player. And I liked that about him. He was a really tough captain for the Springboks. So I chose Gone because of that. And but I hated the concept. I really hated it. It frustrated me, because as soon as we landed, I was very skinny at that time. I'm quite a big guy now, but I was tall and lanky. And I knew, even during the interview processes, when we're going through the stages of being interviewed to be one of the contestants, they would ask, they asked some of the guys, we were in the same room, like 15 of us, like, who would be the weakest link if you were all on an island? And I knew it. People were pointing at me. Mm-hmm. They pointed at me during that process, the interview process. I shut that down when I responded to it. And because Survivor is not only about physical strength, and you cannot tell my physical strength just by looking at my physique, really, because I was quite fit that time. We went to the island, and I knew what was going to happen. I was not surprised when I was picked last as a guy. I was like, expected it. And I was just kind of like smiling inside. I was like, okay, that gives me motivation. Let me prove you wrong. So that's always nice too. It's always so satisfying to prove people wrong, which I had to do pretty much all my life, really, I think so.
Yeah, that was a bit of a running theme through the game of you obviously being underestimated and proving people wrong. We see that with the idol later on. And it was something I think that came up in your relationship with Mark Fish. As you said, you're chosen last. You end up getting into an argument with him when he sits you out of a challenge that you feel you could have been really helpful in. Can you talk about the dynamics of that relationship when it's so team-based and sports-based, and you have a captain who maybe isn't seeing what you can deliver?
Yes. And not just that, they really didn't understand the game. They really struggled with it at the beginning. They were trying to, because they didn't have any stake in the game early on, I guess, except for being voted for by the public. But during the first few days, you could see Mark was struggling, and he tried to stay out of the game and let us do our own thing. But then he's supposed to be this leader at the same time to try and delegate things. And that was never going to work. That was never going to work. So I really got frustrated during that challenge, because I knew I won't shine in a swimming challenge. I just taught myself how to swim a year ago. So I was not a great swimmer, but I could swim at least. So I knew I wanted to train in that. And during the early stages, you need to be an asset on your tribe. They need to see you as someone that you pull your own weight, you do well in challenges early on without being too much of a threat, but you want to be useful in your tribe. And when you feel like you're not given that opportunity to actually, when you feel like, okay, I can really show them now what I'm about in this challenge, and you feel like you're being denied that, that was really frustrating. And you're being denied by someone who doesn't have a stake in the game. At that stage, I didn't care that he used to play for South Africa. He was my childhood hero, winning the African Cup of Nations when I started watching soccer. I really didn't care about that because it's a frustrating situation. I think that was day, we were a few days in and we were already hungry. So you could see emotions were running quite high at that time.
Yeah, I'm sure that was very frustrating, obviously, as a fan, having someone outside of the game dictate a lot of your game. But beyond that, obviously, there are relationships in the game that actually matter to the strategy. You come in as a bit of a swing vote. You have relationships with everyone kind of on that original Utara. Who did you see as your closest connections early on in the game?
Yes. What I used to say to my interviews before we went to the island was, I want to be in charge of my game, but behind the scenes in charge, people don't even know. Sort of like what Graham did, pretty much. Wanted to run the show behind. That's the idea that I had going into the game, that, okay, I'll run the show behind, and then everyone will be under my control, but they won't know it. So that's what I thought in the beginning. But when you land onto that island, everything changes by the hour, by the minute. It's crazy. I know people, I used to say I have an honest face. People believe me quite quickly. And when I smile with them, and I knew people would gravitate towards me. So we had Soli. Soli quickly wanted to become an alpha male, especially with the tribe, with Buhle, Val, and there was Kilani. And then there's me. So I knew they would want me on that side, but I was close to Buhle and Soli at that stage on that alliance. And then I went for a swim, and I knew Marianne liked me as well. She came over to me when we were swimming. She told me about him and Jane. And then at that stage, I had to work out the numbers. I was like, okay, I need to make the right, especially the first vote was very hard for me. I didn't want to vote Kilani off at that stage. So, but even though I was close to Soli and them, I had to go with Marianne and Shane because I was quite close with them as well. At that stage, I'm just gauging people. So it was purely just numbers for me, the numbers that made sense at the time for me to end up going with Marianne and Shane. Otherwise, if numbers made sense to go with Soli and Val and Buhle, I would have probably gone that direction early on.
Because later on, you say that everyone thought that you had voted with them coming back from that vote. We never really saw the fallout. So how did you manage that, where everyone thought maybe you'd been on side, not all the votes had been read, Kilani threw her vote on Van. Yes. So there's some confusion there that it seems like you used to your advantage.
Yes. Because I agreed on both sides. I agreed with them that I'll vote with them, and then I agreed with Marianne and them that I'll vote with them. I raised the concern to, I forgot now, I haven't watched the show back now. I did raise the concern that we don't have enough votes. I think, Kilani, because she was so adamant about voting Zenov. And at that stage, I realized, no. Even if I went with them, it would have been a tie or something. It would have been a tie. And that was a horrible situation. So that would have... Marianne and Shane, they would have noticed that I went the other way because they did count. I don't know, when we came back, I was expecting a fallout as well, to be honest. I was quite shocked that nobody even thought about me. I think I was so quiet in the beginning. I was like so much in the background that nobody gave it one thought to count. I mean, who voted what? Because we didn't really count when we came back who voted who. We're like, okay, Kilani is gone. She threw her vote for Zan, and nobody bothered to add up the numbers and see. So I got away with that one, and I was shocked about it. I was expecting a fallout, and I'd be like, yeah, I had my explanation. Look, I couldn't go with you because you didn't have the numbers. I wouldn't risk my game early on like that. So But they never, for some reason, nobody bothered to even add up the votes and see who voted what at that stage. I don't think the heads were in the game on the during the other alliance in our tribe. Their heads were not in the game. Vel was, her head was not in the game early on. Mm. Butle was just making fire. Her head was not in the game. Soli, only he cared about being the alpha male and winning challenges and being like sort of like an Herculean figure. And I enjoyed that. I liked it. Now, it took the attention away from me and it distracted him. And he was too eager to play strategy early on as well. Wake me up at night and he would want to talk strategy. So I think they were quite distracted. They didn't even sit back and just count who voted for whom. And then they would have known from then that Luxiv was not on our side. But they never got that all the way until merge as well. They never really realized that I was never really on their side after the first vote.
It wouldn't have been very helpful to vote with them, I guess. Yeah, because Kalani ends up throwing her vote. So even if you had voted with them, I think it would have been a 5-4-1 against them instead of a 6-3-1.
And I spoke with Kalani about it because I knew she stood up for me when Mark was like lashed out at me. I knew Kalani did stand up for me, so I didn't want to vote her off. And I liked her as a player. I liked her strong personality, but she was so determined and so sure, and she was not backing down from that, from voting them. And I found that was incredibly frustrating, that first vote. And that was welcome to Survivor for me.
Yeah, not a lot that you can do there. You have to go with the majority completely. I totally understand. So another thing that happens at this pre-swap is the idol. You find it, superfan dream, find the idol without a clue, Russell Hand style, the man of the moment in South Africa, and then it is stolen. Can you walk us through all of that from your perspective?
Oh, my God. I remember it like it was yesterday. I had been looking for the idol since I landed on the island. I really wanted to find it without a clue. And I didn't know they had gotten a clue of Butle and Sunet during their challenge. And I was up and down the beach. I went to the well where we got the water, looked at that, all the usual suspects, all the places that I think, because I've watched so many seasons of Idol, I think I have an idea of what type of rocks and trees and the well as well, where they usually hide the idol. So I had confidence that I would find it. And this day, it's during the day, we're doing nothing. It's one of those times where everyone is just lumbering around. There's nothing, no challenge on the horizon. We were just walking around. Everyone is minding their own business, really, and people are chatting. So I was walking and walking. Then I go to this cave, and that looked promising. These rocks look like a cave, this opening. I just climb a bit, and then I see a cave inside, a small one up there on top, and then I saw it. It was huge, and I was immediately worried because from where I was, I could see where Shane was swimming, and he was my main worry. And I didn't want to share it with them. I just wanted to keep that until merge for myself without anyone knowing. So when it was the rush of adrenaline when you actually see it and it's not on TV and you're actually touching it and knowing that you're the only person who knows where it is and you read that. I couldn't even read it properly. Congratulations, you found the immunity idol. I was so excited. Then I quickly took the paper and then the note. I had it on my pocket, still jumping around. Then I was like, where do I put this? Because I had tiny, tiny tennis shorts, white tennis shorts, and the pockets are tiny as well. I'm like, where do I put this? Do I put this on my crotch? Do I put this on my pocket? There's no way I can put it on my pocket because Shane will see it, obviously. As he was swimming there, he was looking at me. Shane was always alert at those little things that everyone else is doing. So I was like, I'll leave it here for now, because Shane doesn't know that I found the idol. I'll pretend as if I'm still looking. I have my stick with me. I keep looking. And then I left the idol there, went back to camp and pretend as if I'm tired because I could see Shane was watching me the whole time. But without me knowing, Shane had seen something was suspicious in that part of the island. So I didn't see him when he went there. It's just that I think I went there. I checked it. I don't quite remember when I checked, the next day or at night, but I did check and it was not there. My heart sank. My heart sank. And it's one of those, the lowest moment of the game for me as well at that stage. I was defeated. I was like, I will never have. After that, I just thought I won't have control in this game. The kind of control I thought I would have coming into it, thinking that I would boss the show around, I just realized from there, nope, things won't go my way. I just need to adapt to the situation. And I was 90% sure Shane took it. I think I said it to in one of my confessionals that I'm pretty sure Shane has my idol. But it's the knowledge that is power. So the fact that I was 90% sure, I felt it, and my God, that Shane has it. But I tried to find comfort in the fact that I know where it is, and I might flush it out whenever I want to one day, or convince someone else, look, Shane has an idol, let's flush it out. So I was thinking along those lines, but my heart really sank after I lost it, and it was one of the lowest parts of the game for me.
Yeah, because idol stealing isn't something that has happened in any other season of Survivor. So you as a fan, like, can you tell us what happened with finding out that idols would be allowed to be stolen? Like, did that really resonate with you as a fan to be like, okay, this is not something I'm used to. I'm not so sure how this will go. Obviously, you benefit from it later when you steal it back.
Yes.
But that must have been quite a thing to be like, this is a new thing that I'm not used to. And yes, then you're its first victim.
I was quite frustrated, really, when that happened. But in my case, not as much, because I had left it there. So I was just beating myself up so bad. I felt bad for Jenna. That's when it really egged me a bit. I didn't like when they stole her idol, when she went over the Utara camp. That's when I really had a problem with it. I didn't like it. I even had some crazy thoughts of actually telling Jenna, look, your idol has been taken by who? So-and-so, it's in this bag, go and take it back. And let's blindside someone. But that didn't make sense. That would have been a nice power move, blindside, fireworks, because I wanted that. I wanted a big move in the game, at least one big move before I'm voted out, because I'm such a fan. So I had fantasies of telling Jenna when, because that was just plain wrong. I didn't like it as a player, going through your bag and taking your idol. So I wanted to tell her that, but even with that, I was like, that would have been difficult to pull off a blind side with that. It was one of her. David was not on her side. David was flipping. He was with us. So I went with the easy vote there. But with me, I didn't mind it when Shane stole it. I was just kind of like beating myself up for it because I left it there. I was careless with it. But if it was in my bag, I didn't like that as a fan. But of course, look, what goes around comes around. I mean, these things even themselves out. It's just like in soccer. You get some fouls, you don't get some. You get some silly goals that were not supposed to be, and next game you lose a silly goal like that. So I figured it will even itself out at the end, and try to focus on the game. And that's what happened. Things came back in full circle, as you mentioned. That benefited from the same thing at the end as well.
Well, you can say you blame yourself, but in any other season, if you find it and leave it there, but you have the note, it's your idol,
yes.
You know, like, and
yes,
there's very little you can do, obviously, wearing little shorts and not having anywhere to put it when you're being washed. It's a really difficult one. But in any other game, if you found it and you have the note and you've left it there, it is still legally yours. So it's a tough one.
Yeah, it is a tough one. But I'm also thinking, Shannon, imagine now if Shane just went there and I'm thinking now, and he didn't take it and he just knew that I have it. And I would have not known that he knows that I have it. If I went there back again and I saw it again, I would have taken it and I would have gone through the game thinking that I'm the only one who knows that I have it. And that would have been an information as well for him that he knows. I think I would have been out quicker than I lasted. Yeah, but you're right. It's incredibly frustrating when you're in the game, because every little thing that goes against you, it's amplified when you're in that situation. You're really stressed, and it's And the highs are very high as well.
I think having found it with Shane's eyes on you is probably what went wrong there. It wasn't going to go well after that when he had seen it himself. Yeah. So unfortunate. But you mentioned Jenna, which does bring me to my next question, which is you get to the swap. You've talked about how you were the one who was going to be okay no matter where you went at the swap because you had so many relationships. Yes. You wind up in this Utara majority. And this is why I feel the edit did a disservice to you. I feel like you went missing a little bit and we didn't really get to hear your thoughts as much. Obviously, you go to all the tribal councils. Jenna goes, Annette goes, Stephen goes. What can you kind of place us where you were, what you were thinking through all of this? Were you kind of just going with the flow or what was your thinking at this time in the game?
Who? I'm trying to run it back. I have no idea. Yes, I do. Yeah, I would didn't much say this much of a disservice, really. I think that's when my game was stagnating a little bit, as the edit shows. Like I said, I just had plans in my head. I wanted to make that power play. I really fantasized about it when Jenna was sitting. She was sitting there alone, and it looked quite sad, man. It really looked sad. And I thought, is this my opportunity to make a big move? Should I tell her? I really wrestled with it. The idea of telling Jenna where it is, and maybe because I knew where the idol was, and maybe steal it back together and then blindside one of the big players, Marion and Shane, because I was never taking Marion and Shane all the way to the end as well. But then that would have meant that that would have been my coming out, and I'm taking control over the of the alliance now. I'm the head honcho now. I would have been, so that would have been the flip that I would have made at that stage. But I think I was too chicken to make that move at that stage. It was too risky. And I wanted to make it at least to merge as well at that time. So at that time, I didn't really make any power moves, really. Things were pretty straightforward, but we were losing numbers rapidly because we were losing challenges at that stage. But I knew I was safe. And I think that made me, what's the word now, complacent, because I was in a strong alliance, or strong numbers at the time, even though we were losing numbers quite rapidly. We were just waiting for the merge, really. And I thought that's when my game would really kick in again, during the merge.
Well, getting to the merge, obviously you come in here, you're trying to get Solivar and Buchley on side. You're trying to work with Shane and Marion. There's a possibility that you could flip. I mean, I think we thought you would flip more readily than you did. You vote with Shane and Marion, even through the revote. So what was your thought process here? Had you thought David was on side? Like, why? Like, where were you going here with this vote?
I never trusted David one bit. and Seletan, those guys, we had this idea. They were never flipping. We were surprised when they went with Shane. The next vote, but I'm moving ahead now. Sorry, but Seletan, we had this, it was they had this harmony relationship. That's how I pictured them. Really, that's why I was never going to really flip to them. And I should have made more efforts. I should have seen because Shane did show some cracks in that. I thought they were really tight, and I really believed in our plan. I was laser focused on getting Buhle and Vel on our side and Soli. And I was sure I could do that. I was pretty sure that I could convince them to join me and Marion, and then we have the numbers so that we can fight, keep the old Utara, take Utara all the way to the final. And when I hit a brick wall with Buhle, then Vel, I was like, whoa, this is going to be tough. You have to find another way. We have to use idols. We have to use something because we don't have numbers here. So I realized that I was not going to work. And I realized that there was no way that it's useless for me to really flip into Seletan because I'll be just last one in, first one out on that alliance as well. As soon as they get a chance to get rid of me, they will get rid of me. So let me just keep Marion and Shane if I can. Let's try to find a way. And I thought maybe Shane would, because I was 90% sure that Shane had the idol, and I thought he would play it for Marion as well, so we could save her. So I thought we could play the idol and maybe work out something, because I still believed in that we could work out something to blindside one of them and just claw the numbers back somehow. But of course, I was naive at that point.
You talk about getting Solly Valenbuchle back on side and hitting walls. And you come in and they're asked about the idol and there's a lot of different stories coming around. Like, was there a game plan between you and Shade and Marion about how much should be told to them? And if not, like, what were the walls that you were hitting with them? Because it was, that was a difficult situation.
Yeah. Yes. We were not telling them about the idols. I think we had decided we're not going to tell them about the idols. I think they also had confidence in the relationship that I had with Buhle, Vel, and Solly, Marion and Shane. I think that they had confidence that I would put them on the side, or they'd come my side. And I didn't. I mean, we should have seen that they survived there, those few days they were with Celetan. So clearly there was something that was growing between them and that tribe. But not even for one second did we think they wouldn't come with me, flip back to Utara. I think we just focused on that game plan. But we were never telling them that there's an idol. Shane didn't share with me that he has that idol as well, the one he stole with me. I think it's the second idol that I knew Shane had.
Jenna's idol, yeah.
Shane's second idol. That's the only one I knew. But the one, because I knew he had two, so he was not sharing that with me. And there was no way we were sharing it with, I think, with Val and Butler and Solly at the time. I think that was the thinking.
Right, so you can't get them on side, which was surprising. Yeah. You have to rely on idols, which aren't played, you know, to secure both Marion and Shane in the game, just Shane.
Yeah.
And then you wind up being on the wrong side of the votes at the merge. But then there's going to be a blindside on Solly that you're included in here. But it's shaky ground, I feel, for you after you can't get that old Utara majority back together.
Yes.
What's your game plan happening here, whether you're included in the vote or not? Did you have much of a pathway you were thinking to the end?
When Solly was voted, didn't I vote for Solly?
Yeah, you did. But even in all of this, before you're included, when you're all of it, but like, it's still, a tentative position.
Oh, yeah, the planning.
Yeah.
Yes, the planning. No, Shane came to me, I think, and he's like a kid. He came to me running like a kid, and he's so excited. He's like, Sivu, I got them, I told you. Because that's what we try. That's why I did mention this as well. That's what we tried to do as well, before Marion was voted out as well. Because I think we also believed that Shane and Marion were working on them. The other Celetan, they were trying to find cracks on the original Celetan. And I was going to work on Vel and Butle and Solly and them. So Shane and Marion were convinced there were cracks on Celetan. I was not convinced of that. And that's why I focused on my game with, I was convinced that I could bring Butle and Vel and them. But Shane was super convinced that, and him and Marion would find cracks on Celetan, the original one. So Shane came to me excited. I think it was the last hour before voting, before we went to tribal. But it was like last minute. And it's like, you putting Solly's name down, it's happening. I'm telling you, I think it was something like that, yeah. I told you there were cracks in them. We're in charge now, something along those lines. But he was excited, Andy. And I was like, okay. I trusted him at this stage. And I saw he had been talking to Xavion and Graham and them. He had been chatting with, but then that was the beginning of his downfall as well, because he believed too much of the influence he had on Graham and Xavion. He thought Graham and Xavion were ironclad after that blindside, I think.
Yeah, before that happens, and we'll definitely talk about working with Shane and Shane being blindsided. You do get the Solly vote. Then there's a little bit more power here where this, like, group of five comes together, Graham, Xavion, David, you, and Shane, for this double of the Moira and the Val votes. Can you talk about that new power dynamic? And again, like, where your thought process is in all of these very rapidly changing dynamics, power and, like, more power coming in, and where you were seeing kind of your path through the game.
And during that time, I'm only talking strategy with Shane. Shane is interacting with them. And that was another downfall in my game when I look back. Because during that time, Shane is interacting with Xavion and Graham. I'm not even talking strategy with them at that stage. I'm just interacting with Shane because I'm really skeptical about Celetan. I just want to, even when we get rid of Solly, we get rid of. Okay, I didn't mind Solly. We get rid of Moira. I was happy about that. At least that's one solid time. Because I didn't like the fact that we were getting rid of the old Utaras, because I knew they might have a majority going to the last five or the last six. But Shane was like, he was super convinced that he has them, and it seemed as if Shane, Xavion, and Graham, and I knew Graham, we stayed together with Graham. He was super paranoid the whole time. It was exhausting. Just talking to him and sitting by the fire with him, extremely exhausting, because he was paranoid. The moment people leave and talk without him, he's paranoid, and he talks about it. So I thought Shane was really in his head because of that paranoia as well. I didn't realize how in control he was at that stage. But he was actually, to his credit, control, even though he was as paranoid as he was. So Shane was the one talking with them. I wasn't. I was talking to Shane because I was really skeptical of them. But I was just reassuring, making sure, Shane, are you sure about this? Should we try something else? Should we think about it? But Shane was, he believed in his game so much, and he believed there was a little player. Now we were not really, he was just like telling me, like, look, Sivu, this is happening. We've discussed it with the guys. It's going to go. And I was like, okay, there's no point in really arguing about it now, because I just need to look out for my back now. If things go down badly, I need to have a way to keep on surviving, because that's the aim of the game. Just survive whatever happens.
Well, you talk about working with Shane as like a primary alliance at that point in contact through the game. He's about to get blindsided. It's a time when you're immune, so there's some safety there for you, but you did seem concerned about Shane's bravado, the arrogance, that he might get blindsided.
Yeah.
When you went into that tribal council, did you have an inkling of it, or were you just scared in general that like Shane's comeuppance was clearly coming at a point?
It from the first, from the original Utara tribe when we were in our island, Meryn and Shane, I saw them as they were very excited to play the game. I knew that they might play themselves out of the game. I didn't think people would outsmart them, but I knew they would play themselves out of the game, and I think that's what happened. They were too eager to play the game too early. That's how I felt in the beginning, and that's how I read them. And so, especially with Shane, I saw this. I saw, because we were together the whole time, I just saw his personality. I saw his, as his power grew in his head, he, and the air, what's this, the aura of invisibility, I saw it. And during that time when they were when I won the challenge and he stepped down as well for ice cream on that challenge that I won, I was worried about that, and I was uneasy the whole day, even though I had my immunity in A class, but I was uneasy. And I think that's when I asked him if he was sure. That, because these guys, they pretty much know that he has an idol, or they have an idea that he has an idol. They might want to, and they know that he's a big game player. And they've seen already the moves he's made firsthand now, because he's been negotiating with them firsthand. They've seen how he moves, like I had seen throughout the game as well. And that concerned me. I didn't want to take Shane or Meryn into the final, because I played with them. I saw how they move. I saw when they make the move. I saw their moves from the beginning when they planned it and how they executed them. Now, Xavion and Graham had peeked through that window when they worked with Shane on those two or three votes prior. And I just knew they wouldn't go to the final with him, of course. So at that time, it was, the timing was perfect to blindside Shane. As a fan, I was like, if I was them, I would blindside you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Shane, you have an idol. Play it. And I think that's the, when he was voted out, I had the immunity in a place, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, no, just play idol. Let's live to fight another day. The idol will be hidden again. We'll find it. We found idols without a clue. Just play it to be safe. And I really, it's weird when you're there. It's your senses, and you just feel it. I just felt it that day, and I was like, no, let me talk to him. But he seemed so sure. He seemed so sure that they were still voting with him. And that was another mistake. as you see, there are many mistakes in this game when you're in it. It's just all about adapting. Just adapt.
Well, take me through the journey from Shane getting voted out to you getting the idol in his shoe. Like, how soon did the thought come to you that you're going through his stuff? Did you have any information from him about where it possibly was? Or were you just like, I'm going to go look through his stuff because there's probably an idol there?
Yeah. It's amazing how the subconscious mind works. I didn't think when he was voted out, I was like, oh, weird. What do I do now? How do I wiggle out of this one? You feel defeated for like just 1 hour. The next hour, you're like, you have renewed energy. Like when, especially when you wake up the next morning, I'm like, okay, I still have a chance. I can win the immunity challenge. I can buy myself another day, because 1 day on Survivor is huge. It changes everything. So it's like, just one more day, just one more day. I still have a day to fight. I still have an immunity challenge coming up. I'll go all out to win that one. And that was my thinking. I didn't think about the idol during that time. We went for the pizza challenge when the parents came through, which was amazing. We fortunately had the opportunity to sit down and have some food, just get some food into our bodies, with even though our parents were not sitting with us there. That's when it popped into my head with Shane's shoes. I had seen this prior. I don't remember when we were going to tribal council. Shane had his bag and his shoes. We had two pairs of shoes, the swimming ones, the ones we go into the water with, and then the ones we wear really on land. But Shane loved wearing those, the ones we swim with, really. Those techies. What do you call it? Techie. I don't know if you call it techies or sneakers.
I personally call it tacky, but it's because I'm South African.
It's like
the one South African word I can't. I think run is here in Australia, sneakers, yeah.
Oh,
like everyone should be using tacky.
Like,
I can't shake that word.
Yeah. I grew up with that, man. It's crazy. So I was like, I had seen something funny in his shoe, because I was walking in front of him or behind him, but his shoes were not the same. The bulge was not the shape. The left shoe and the right shoe, you could see there's a huge bulge by on the shoe. It's been stuffed in all the way into the toes, and it made sense to me. That is why he's always wearing those ones, the other ones, and never worn these shoes. But I thought at that stage, this was a few votes back, and I thought at that stage I will steal it. I'll steal back the idol. Because I know where it is. When he's swimming somewhere there, because he would leave his shoes on our underneath the tap, I was like, I'll steal it. I want it. But then that thought somehow left my brain for a while, and it came back when I was sitting there before the immunity challenge. I was like, whoa, wait a minute. I never checked Shane's shoe. Shane is not here, but they actually checked his bag. The Silliton guys, Graham and them, when he was voted out, they went through his bag. They took everything out of his bag. They didn't find any idol. They were like, Shane didn't have the idol. Because they blindsided him, thinking he had an idol. But they didn't check his shoes. And his shoes were side by side with his bag. But they just went through his bag. Shane was so confident, he didn't go to tribal with his bag. So now when that came up, back into my mind, popped in. No, look, I've seen the bulge. It's worth a try. Let me go check. As soon as we come back, because from the pizza challenge, we went straight to immunity challenge. And I still had that chance to win the immunity challenge. And I had tiny, tiny bit of hope that what I saw was really the idol Shane stole from me. What I saw days back. And when I lost the challenge, and I thought I had won it at some stage, that challenge, with the flags coming down, I thought I had the name correctly, but I had it two letters wrong. So I ran back. We went back to camp. And at night, it's pitch black. The cameras, I mean, they have infrared cameras, so they can see us pretty much. But it was pitch black when we came back. We came back quite late. And then Shane's shoes were not, as you enter underneath the tap, they were not far from there. And nobody seemed to care about them. Then I just felt it with my hands while I'm busy, felt it with my hand quickly, chucked it in onto my tracksuit. This time I had learned where to put it so that people don't see it. And then I went away so that nobody sees me to hide it. And that was that. I was so excited because I couldn't scream. I couldn't celebrate because everyone is right here. Everyone is right here. But the fire was, I'm not sure if the fire was going on at the time, but it was pitch black. I don't think it was full moon yet, because sometimes it's full moon, so you can, it's quite bright. But it was pitch black that night, underneath the tap at least. So I just felt it with my hand, and then I pulled it out, hid it in my crotch this time around, my tracksuit, and then went away a little bit just to hide it underneath the trees. That was an incredible moment. Yeah, it's coming back to my head now.
Yeah, I love the idea of you finding it after they've checked his bag and it's just like right next to it in the shoe. Like that's like movie level magic to me, that it's like they were so close. Because we were like, why didn't they check his stuff? But they did, but just like not the shoes. That's amazing.
Because when they did that, I was so angry. Remember, I was angry with when they took Jenna's one, and that was for me, that was benefiting me and my alliance, but I was not happy with it. But now when they were going through Shane's bag, I was really pissed. Sorry to say that. I was like, because I wanted that, because I was thinking that idol, because I knew 90% sure that Shane has the idol. It's in his bag. I thought it was in his bag, and when they didn't find it, I was laughing. But so I thought Shane had left with them. They were with him until the third popped in. I was like, his shoe. And I had to check. So during that moment, I was watching them when they were checking his bag and the shoes were there. I was not thinking the shoes as well at that time. I was just focusing on the bag. I was like, oh my God, they'll find this idol. I was so angry. And they have the numbers, they'll have the idol. And I was also angry that Shane didn't play the idol. A whole lot of emotions at once were happening. But yeah. It's nice that I found it on the shoe, and they had looked, and it was right in front under their nose. That was poetic justice for me. It was nice.
Had Shane gone to tribal council wearing his water shoes, but they were in his tackies, or had he gone barefoot?
He was wearing his water, the ones we pretty much use on water. He was not wearing the other ones you wear on land. Those the hiking boots.
So tricky.
Those hiking shoes, yeah. He was not wearing those ones. Those were the ones with the idol. He left them behind with his bag because he was so confident he's not going out. He would wear his robe, leave his bags behind because he knows he's not getting voted out tonight. But one idol was with him. I don't know where, maybe in his crotch as usual. But one idol he was with him in case something happens, in case he feels a certain energy during tribal council, then he would play it. I think that was the thinking. But he didn't feel that energy, of course, because they played it well at the end of the day to blindside him.
So you have the idol now, which is amazing.
Yes.
Here, there's the Altov vote at the final six, where Altov comes to you and tells you that it's going to be you, and that he knows you would have told him the same, even though you know it's him. And it comes out pretty obviously that it is Altov here, which gives you the luxury of using your idol at the next one. I don't know if there's a lot of the Altov stuff. You probably have some feelings about the rice being poured out and all of kind of the emotion there.
That was amazing. I was happy because it meant that I don't have to play my idol until the top final five. I was really happy. I wanted it to go as bad as it could. Of course, there's name calling and everything, but I really didn't care at the time. I was really celebrating every time that the whole collapse was happening, and them just turning on each other. That was fun to watch for me. I was pretty relaxed that day. It's just that I was still nervous. I mean, I don't want it to be like, it's all tough. But I saw how toxic it became and how the emotions, raw emotions, how angry everyone, people involved were. Altav was not happy. Zevion, of course, not happy, and Graham. So once it became clear Altav was going on his own accord, pretty much, that was a huge thing for my game. That was big, because I think I was going to pretty much have to play my idol for myself, like during the top six or something.
It's around this time as well that you are reconnecting with Buchle, after you've obviously had the relationship, but never really been strategically on the same page. So how did you guys reconnect so strongly around here at the final five?
I think it became a thing of like, we never had a problem with each other up until that stage. We realized that we never really had a problem with each other. It's just that Buchle probably didn't want to play with Meren and Shane. And she had realized that this Seletan Oasis, it's not what it's not as I think she realized that it's everyone for themselves at that time. And she knows the only person she's connected with that is left from the beginning was me. And we really didn't have a choice. We needed each other at that stage, because when the numbers were that low, one vote is huge as well. So we quickly realized that we needed each other if we're going to pull anything out of the bag here, because it was pretty clear that the Seletan guys, original, they were even reeling David in. They're telling him, you part of Seletan, you original Seletan. And it was clear to Buchle they had, David was even above her on the food chain. So that was that. I think that's why we gravitated towards each other and how easy it was, because we never really had a problem with each other up until that stage. And we had that connection from the beginning. And she was my island mom. I called Marian was my island wifey. We cuddled together during the cold nights at Utara. And Buchle was my island mom because I was a mess. Buchle would just pick up my clothes and sort them out nicely, my stuff, and fold them and put them in one place. And I called her my island mom. So we did have that connection. I called her the fire queen. And everyone was like, she's the fire queen because she made fire for us. So she was like a mom to me at that time. So we had that friendship. And that's why I was so convinced as well that Buchle would come. And if Buchle comes, Soli would come. And Vel will come for sure during the match. That's why I was so convinced. Because we did have a relationship that was endearing between us during our time at Utara. And that's why it was easy for us to work together again when we did need each other.
So you guys are going to work together on this epic move. You talk about how as a fan you wanted to make a big move. You definitely got, I think, the move every fan would dream of having, the epic idol play when everyone thinks it's not you, everyone's underestimating you, assuming you're out the door, and then you get to just stand up and say, nope, not happening. So just talk us through that moment from your perspective, because it was truly epic.
Oh my God, I even love the edit. I love how it came out when I watched it. I watched it as a fan with my family. Everyone was jumping up and down in my house.
I was
watching
jumping
that
up and
episode.
Down when I watched it.
Oh, nice. that was amazing. Oh, because now I know, and I was itching to play this idol. I was itching for a move. I mean, even if it's one big move, I'm like a singer, I just want one hit song as in. So, because I had done quite a lot of things, I had won an individual immunity. I had won a tribal immunity. I had experienced this. I had won a reward challenge. I've done these things. What I hadn't done is be in charge of a big move like that. And I really wanted it to be spectacular. I love theater. I love watching theater. So I was always going to do it that way. And the opportunity just arose for me to do it that way when we're in top five. And for me, it was clear. The numbers, 3-2 at that stage, I think. So it was clear for me. Buchle, I'll play the idol for myself because I think they find me as a bigger threat because I have quite a few friends on the jury. So that's what I said. But just to be safe, I know the captains, whichever captain, they both respect you as a strong woman who kicks the ball very well. And they appreciate that as sports stars. They love you. They love what you're about. They really respect you, the captains. They don't care about the strategy and anything. They just respect you as a strong woman. So I knew they would give her their vote if she begged for it for the Salvation Cup. and it would have been 2-2 if they voted for Mutle instead of me. It was just, everything just fell into place perfectly for me. This, everything was just so clear. And told Mutle once, she got it. It was just perfect. The most difficult part about it, the day was so long. It was so long. You have everyone coming to talk to you. And being condescending and everything. And they telling you how you played a great game and you, how much of a nice guy you are. I'd love to meet you afterwards and let's have lunch in Joburg when you're in Joburg and all of that stuff. I was like, okay. That was the most difficult part. Just me and Mutle keeping our poker face on. But it was all worth it when it came. Even during Tribal Council, keeping that poker face as well, because Tribal Council is quite long. Of course, they edit it into a few minutes, but it's quite long being there with Nico asking questions. I'm thinking the whole time, Nico, don't ask me a question that will make me slip up, or Mutle a question that will make her slip up. But she was brilliant. She was brilliant throughout, and I kept my face as well. And when the moment came and they had voted for me for real, and I, because I've seen that moment on TV on Survivor, when as the audience, I know the guy has the idol, he'll play the idol, or she'll play the idol, and the people have voted. It's amazing when they start reading their names and the person has played the idol. That always gave me a high just watching. And being there, me playing, when Nico says, if there's anybody who wants to play a hidden mini idol, this is your time to play it now. I was like, yes. Going, reaching for my bag behind me. And everyone's like, ah, at the same time. And I pull it out for real. And then I stood there. I start talking to Nico. I don't even know how I got through my speech there. I don't even remember really saying it. I was in some state. That was the best moment of my game. And I knew I had achieved all that I wanted to achieve, because my mother as well, another win for me was my mother flying for the first time, having a holiday for the first time since she had me. And that was amazing to see her on the island. I'm like, you've been on a plane? And she was like a little kid. She was like, oh my God. I was like, you were not scared. And you actually came here all the way and you're going to fly back to South Africa. So I had done all of these things, but me playing that immunity title, knowing that they had voted for me, was the sweetest thing the whole game. And I had achieved everything I wanted to achieve at that moment. And I just wanted to get to the final so bad, because I needed to be in the final just to make it there. For my ego as well, to some point as well. To say that I survived, I was never voted out. I still say that to this day. I was never voted out.
Yeah, you definitely ticked the list of you know, almost everything you'd want to achieve in Survivor, which I'm sure as a fan must have been pretty thrilling. Strategically, Graham has immunity there. Did he save himself, or was it always going to be Xavion for you? Obviously, you have control. You can idle out whoever you want. Was it always going to be Xavion, or if Graham, if David has immunity, would you have?
No, it was always Graham first for me. I was, for some reason, I was never really scared of Xavion as much as Graham, because I think at this stage I had realized how much of a game he had played. Xavion, he could be clouded by the fact that he's just a physical threat. Because you realize on Survivor they tend to respect a strategic game than the physical prowess. I've seen Survivor players who was it Ozzy? I don't know the name, it's Ozzy or something, sorry.
Yeah.
But I'd seen some really good players winning challenges all the way to the final, and then people make it as if that's not a great way to get to the final. They'd be like, oh, you just got here because you won challenges. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's amazing. But people don't see it as like, oh, you were brilliant, you outwitted us, you were smarter than us. They tend to favor that. Oh, you lied, you schemed, you were conniving and all of that. So that's with that outwit, outplay, outlast, people tend to respect the outwit part on Survivor. If you see, if you could line up the winners as well, if you would put the winners and just rank them and see how many have won that just purely physically. So for some reason, I was I was scared of Grammar than Xavier because of that. I thought Grammar was more strategic, and I was annoyed with his paranoia most of the time. I just wanted him off the island as well. And I liked Xavier. I enjoyed chatting with Xavier and chilling there. Graham just frustrated me being there. He was always paranoid. You have no idea.
Well, speaking of that, around this time, you and Graham are going to be having some arguments. Graham seems upset that you're getting such a commotion, such applause and acclaim at Tribal Council, and he feels like his game is kind of getting tanked by that. And he talked in his deep dive about how even after the game, you guys were fighting on the bus for hours on the way to the airport, and they had to pull the car over. So there's a lot going on here, and it's emotional. And he, I think, wanted to get your take on all of this and those arguments that were being had around this time.
Yeah, no, it's the island fever, man. That's you just cranky at that time. It's like emotions. If you're a person that cries on that island, you will cry a lot. If you're a person that argues all the time, you'll argue too much there. And I think we were just cranky at that time, and we were so because Graham was worried that I might actually take his title because I think he saw it as his title. That's what I read. He saw it as if he's played the better game. He's played the most complete game physically, strategically, and he really believed that. And on the other hand, I really believed I played a great game as well. And I felt like people didn't respect my game as well. And how I got there, they feel like I've just rode on Merrin and Shane. And that was an insult to me because I saw Merrin and Shane's game firsthand. And I knew early on they would play themselves out. And I told Shane, be careful. I told him when he was going to get voted out. So I felt like people disrespected my game. And when Graham would argue with me about who has played a better game, or see, they'll vote for you because they're your friends, but I've played a better game than you. That really ticked me off, like things like that. But it lasted long. It really lasted long, even on our way back. It was crazy. We also stayed at a guest house together as well, but that's when we stopped. It took about like a week for us to really stop arguing with each other.
Well, you speak about that and the problems you were having and how Graham was your biggest threat, but then at the final four, you're going to be making a deal with Graham in this challenge to keep him. So what was your thought process in that? Obviously, you know that he's a big threat. You know that he's a possible problem in Final Tribal Council. You're in that challenge. What was your thought process in that?
Yeah, I think after the high of my blind side, when I blindsided Xavion, one of the biggest players in the game, and how spectacular it was, and in front of the Jerry and everyone, I think it also got into my head a little bit. And when we were standing there, the four of us, I honestly didn't see anyone winning over I at that stage. At that stage, because I had won an individual immunity, I had shown that I'm a physical threat in some challenges. By winning that individual immunity, it's not a tribal one. I had shown that I'm actually playing this game strategically. I have the most, with what I believe was the most spectacular blindside of the season, in our season. And I thought they would appreciate all of that. And they would appreciate the fact that nobody thought I would last 5 days on that island. So I thought all of that together, I was like extremely confident that I would beat any one of them. I just need to get to the final. My sole focus was get to the final and you win this. Get to the final, you win this. So I was going to do anything that gets me into the final. So now that last challenge, that endurance challenge, after what was it? Just after 2 hours squatting like that in that heat. And then it starts raining, cats and dogs, and it was horrible. I couldn't stand any longer. And I saw Butle was not backing down, and I'm like, we won an alliance as well, but she was not backing down as well after I made that that deal with Graham. But at that stage, I made a deal with Graham just to guarantee myself, because it's 2-2, anything can happen. I was aware of that. Butle could flip anytime. She's flipped before with Celetan. She might see now it's getting closer to winning the whole thing. People change when you get that close. And I changed as well. It was in my head, and I thought I would actually win it all just by getting into the final. I was aware that Buhle might, I mean, nothing is stopping her from flipping if it's just 2-2. Because there were rumblings already, Graham might just say, Sif is a bigger threat than me. Take me and David. You have a chance of winning against me and David. And I thought Graham was a bigger threat than them. I wanted to take David and Buhle ideally, but I was confident I would beat Graham as well in the final. If I just make it to the final, my sole focus was making it into the final three.
So Buhle does obviously betray you here, as you said, that you thought it was something that could happen. So you weren't very shocked by how that went down, again, knowing that that was something she could do?
Yeah, but when it's weird because I knew, I mean, it makes sense it might happen, but when it happened, it really like, it's like a punch into the stomach. That's one betrayal that really, I felt that one. Because I felt like you were taking this opportunity as a super fan from me now. It's like I just felt like a victim that time. I was like, how can you, Buhle? We just pulled off a wonderful move together. But of course, we were sharing that move. So it made sense for her to get rid of me. Maybe I should have gotten rid of her as well. Now, because we were together in that move. But even though I felt like it was my move, but I mean, in the eyes of the jury, we pulled it off together. So it was good on her part, but when she did it, even though I expected it might happen, it's a possibility, it was a punch in the gut. It really, when I realized it's happening, because I would speak to him, like, it's still Graham, we're still voting off Graham, or what was it, Graham or David? But I was like, we're still voting off this person.
David,
I would see the answers she's giving me. I'm like, you could tell she's not into it. And then I depended on that to Graham, like, swear on your mother, because I saw how much he loved his mother when they visited for the pizza challenge. He was crying. He's a mama's boy. And I said, swear on your mother and love Jesus. I'm like, swear on God, swear to God, because I know he loves Jesus as well and God. So I used all of that. And there was no, I mean, he could have just voted any way he wanted to, but he had sworn on his mother and he loved his mother. I was just hanging on by that. And still I had to do a fire challenge after that. So that saved me because I could see Buhle was not voting with me anymore. She had changed. The mood had changed. When you talk to her, you see the mood has changed completely. And that's when I started reminding Graham, remember what you promised, man. Remember what you promised. Remember what you saw. The whole country will see it. Started chatting with him throughout the day before we went to tribal. Like, I'm voting David. You're voting David as well. Yes, if I'm voting. He was so angry. I'm voting David. I told you I'm voting David. And I was surprised that he did. I was really surprised that he did at the end.
Yeah, I mean, that saved you. That got you the chance to go into fire. Did you feel confident going against David in fire?
Yes, I did. The way I think we looked at Seletan as Utara, they were too soft. I mean, we didn't have fire for a few days. They were living their life. They were eating their rice, their everything. I looked at them as, well, like, it's like for me when I grew up in the township. You had, in the township, you're living in shacks there. And then you had suburbs, the ones in brick houses and stuff. So the way I viewed Seletan was sort of like, I'm from the township, and they're from the suburbs with nice brick houses. So I've always seen them as soft, including Graham and all of them, except for Zevion, of course, because he dragged me around in one challenge. Okay. Mentally and just their spirit, I felt like it was quite soft. And I made myself believe that we had it tough on Utara. I'm not really good at making fire, but I think I can do better than anyone from Seletan. That's what I thought, at least at the time. So I worked myself up. So I was pretty confident when we were doing that. But it took some time to even get it going, that fire as well, even for me. We were both struggling for some time there.
Well, speaking of other experiences where you should have been confident, you go to Final Tribal Council. You hear that Marion is saying that if you don't win, it's an injustice to the game. From what Graham has said, you were getting a lot of love. Did you come out of that confident that you had won? And which vote surprised you to not get? Like, I think Marion probably is at the top of that list.
It is there. It is there. But It's really weird. The last day before we went to tribal council, preparing my speech, we're just sitting around. I was pretty confident that I'll do well. But when we were there, Graham said his speech. Buhle and me, we all said our piece, and then they started addressing us. When Graham complained, Sif is getting a lot of love, I can see, and he's emotional about it. It's like this title will be taken away from him, and he's the one who deserves it more than the two other people that are sitting in the same place with him, same destination we've reached, in whatever way we reached it. He felt like he deserved it more. So, and I felt like my game was being disrespected because people knew where I come from, and they automatically assumed that I needed something. I'm like, come on, I'm doing my honors in astrophysics in one of the best universities in Africa, and you're telling me I need handouts. I've made it to the final when you think I wouldn't make it. So that I was really angry during that final tribal council. I got angry a little bit that, look, I have done everything. I've never needed sympathy. Just because I said I grew up in the township in Khayelitsha, you automatically assume I'm playing the sympathy vote. So I was like, don't vote for me for that. So the wheel started coming off there. When I got with that, and when Graham started complaining, and I was like, it's sort of like a reverse psychology thing that was going to happen after the votes were made, and I'm just trying to think who might have voted for me, who might have not, and counting, and I'm thinking, oh flip, this might be a reverse psychology type of thing, because those are fans of Survivor, the ones that are voting there in the joint, and they want something spectacular, so everyone is expecting at that stage Sif is going to win it. They might go the other way. That's what I thought, at least. I was always wary of that. And I think that's what happened at the end when they read the votes. I was like, not surprised Graham won, but I was surprised Buhle got some votes, because I was not feeling that from the jury. I was not feeling that they would give Buhle that many votes, but I was surprised with the amount of votes Buhle got. I think she even got more than me at that stage. So that surprised me. I was happy with Zevian's vote as well. I was surprised with that. I thought he would vote for Graham as well. That's that pretty much with that.
So you thought that because you'd been kind of like the chalk player to win, that you'd come in with the momentum that these other game players who wanted like a shocking surprise thing might be going for Graham as like the big final moment, instead of going for what you felt was you as the obvious choice.
Yes, especially with Marion as well. I mean, when I saw that she was voted for Graham, after Graham won, I was like, oh, okay. It was just like that. I was like, oh, okay. After what she said, I mean, it's contradicting what she said earlier on, but I was like, I expect that from Marion, because I was thinking Marion was voted out during Madge, and she's a super fan. She wants to play the game. So she was going to play the game. She was going to be involved in the game until the end. She didn't get the chance, unfortunately, to really strut her stuff during the match when it's really exciting. It's an individual game. She missed all of that. She was going to have her moment. So at the end, so that's how I looked at it at the time. Like, okay, she'll have her moment. She'll say this and then go the other way and vote the other way. So it was not a surprise for me, knowing the player she is. She's an explosive. She's a spectacular player together with Shane. I mean, I expected Shane as well to say, would Shane say to vote the other way as well, I would have not been surprised.
So in watching it back, what was that experience like? As a fan, you're maybe, you know, not so sure that you've won, but there's always the chance that you have. Yeah. You're watching with your family. Like, what was that experience like?
That was amazing, and I didn't tell them how far I got. My mother knew that I had gotten until top six, at least, because she went to the island. And I love watching movies and series, and I don't want someone telling me the end or what happened. So I really get angry when people do that. Don't pre-blow my mind. Don't do that. So I was not going to pre-blow my friends and family's minds. So it was interesting watching them. Every time they worried that I would be voted out, so if it's not in the game yet, I won't make it that far. Because you could see, they're not sure as well. But the more I get into the game, the more they see me, you could see it was exciting watching them. But for me, I was not even watching my game, man. I loved Shona's game. I loved Marion's game. I loved watching Shane. I loved watching Graham as well on that side. I had high hopes for Ashley, but she was voted out first. I was such a fan of everyone. When we met for the reunion, it was like a meeting, especially with the Slayton guys, because I didn't stay with them for long. It was exciting to meet them and talk to them because I'd seen them on TV as well, even though I was on TV as well. But it was really the first time I was seeing them during the reunion show and actually talking to them, because I never got to talk to the ones who were voted off before the match on Slayton. So I was a fan of those guys as well, the guys that I played with. I hated David during the game, but we did build a relationship, and I loved this game watching it. It's different from some people might not like it, that flip-flopping and stuff, but it's his game, and he did it very well. So I was a fan for most of them watching. I was not watching my games so much, but just enjoying the show, and it was a good season.
Well, you have this very strange reunion where they announce it at the end. And as you said, that you wouldn't have been surprised if you lost. But did you come into that night with hope that you had won and then you have to sit through the whole reunion? Or did you feel that you hadn't won?
Yes. During that last day, I mean, the show played like 6 p.m. on that Sunday. It was 5 p.m. 5 p.m. I think 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. So the whole day from the morning, I don't know how many times as I run the votes that I could have had in my head and which ones I'm sure I didn't. So there are votes that I'm sure I had, there are votes that I might have on the other side, and votes that I'm sure I didn't get. And then I would see I win, and then I lose, and then I win, and then I lose. I don't know how many times that changed in my head before the live show. And then you're trying to gauge the people, because I was with them as well. You try to gauge as you chatting with them. What's the mood like when they talk to you? Did they vote for you? And that you're trying to think, and then that keeps on changing. So there were some moments that I thought I'd won during that day, and there were moments where I was like, nah, I didn't win. But I think I was mostly hopeful that I was going to be named the ultimate survivor.
Yeah, definitely an intense experience.
It is.
You know, it's a lot, but I think that you were someone that definitely we loved to watch. I think that the fans really loved. If given the opportunity, would you play again?
Oh, without a doubt. It wouldn't even take me a second to run back into that island and play better this time, hopefully, because now you've been exposed to TV and you know there's editing and everything. Sometimes you're disappointed at how they edited you, and I'd probably be just nasty, because that's what people appreciate now, because playing a quiet game behind the scene, methodical, and because I mean, my personality, that's a big part of the game, dealing with personalities. And I dealt with personalities brilliantly till the last day. Nobody really hated me on that island. That was dealing with personalities you'd never meet in your life. And I felt like people didn't respect my game, and I still feel that way sometimes. But I understand why people vote on Survivor for a certain game, for a spectacular game that's out there as well. So I'd probably just do silly things when I go back there, like things that are loud that people will see. But that's probably not a good idea, because it'd be voted out quickly. But I tried to get to the final playing a slightly louder game than I did now this one.
There were definitely times that were, I mean, that idol play was loud. I don't know if you can get much louder than that. That was definitely something that, was at peak decibel, I feel, for Survivor.
Yes.
But we loved your game on the podcast. So if you feel like maybe people didn't see it, I feel like we did. You came second in the Chizzy. There was a lot of great stuff happening through the pre-swap as well, and through the merge, and some really cool stuff that was going on. So we love watching it. It's been great to talk to you about it, but we spoke about it at the beginning of the podcast. It has been 7 years since it all came out on TV. What's been happening in your life in the last 7 years that has made you the new Sivu that we speak to today?
Yes. Let me just say to that point as well, you guys are amazing. I mean, the way you analyze the show, the first episode I listened, Marian sent me, I was like, this is amazing. Uh-huh. It's like you are there. It's like you're in our heads. And like, some of the time it's spooky. I'm like, no, Shannon and Mike, I mean, it's like you're in my head that time, the way you analyze it. And I was like, it's so nice when people see what you are thinking without saying it. And I was like, this is brilliant. So thank you guys as well for that. And of course, you will realize, you will recognize a good game. At least you won't be like everyone else who didn't recognize it. You guys are, you experts. That is nice.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that. That honestly makes me so happy when I hear that players think we're seeing them, because obviously we're seeing an edited product and we're trying to work out what people are thinking behind the scenes. So the worst thing would be if a player was like, you did not get it at all. So when I hear a player say, no, you saw it, you got it, nothing makes me happier. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah, no, that was brilliant. Now for me, well, I was still in, I was doing my master's, I think, when the show, when the show was playing on TV, I think. And now I started working for, what was it, 2017. I left uni, then I started working as a research scientist in a research and development in a manufacturing company. That's what I've been doing pretty much. Not a school kid anymore. Mm-hmm. I work now as a professional, and I have a baby coming up now. Yes.
Congratulations.
Finally, man. I have a wife.
Oh my gosh, you grew up, Sibu. What a thing happened. Yeah.
I got married last year at 30, and at the point, my mother has been waiting. She's like, finally, a 31-year baby coming.
When is the baby due?
We're going for the scan now, actually, tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll go for the ultrasound because, I mean, the doctor had two heartbeats for some reason, apparently. It might be that.
Oh, wow. So, well, a lot going on, Sibu.
I'm hoping for those, but we're going to the doctor. We'll check the ultrasound tomorrow because we're both excited for that.
So what month? 2021? What, like?
Oh yes, yeah, in July or something.
July.
Somewhere in July. Yes.
Oh wow.
Somewhere in July.
What a time.
July, August. Yes. Yeah.
Congratulations. That is so happy. I'm so glad everything's so great.
Thank you very much, Anna. So that's what's been happening now. I'm a daddy, not a boy anymore.
Amazing stuff. It's been so great to catch up with you, hear all about your game, hear that you had a happy ending in life. You were a Survivor finalist, live the dream. Hopefully we'll get to see you one day play again. But until then, everything's great with you. And honestly, it makes me so happy because, as you know, loved watching your game and it's been so fun to talk to you about it.
And thank you very much, Shannon. I appreciate you. And thanks for loving my game. That warms my heart. And say hi to Mike for me as well. I love your analysis, like I said, you guys. And I'll continue listening to more of your stuff as well. The more I have time to.
Might be difficult with a new baby, but we appreciate that. Mike is listening anyway, so I don't have to. You said hi to him yourself, but I'll let him know.
Yes. No, thank you very much, man, for this interview. Yes. It was nice to reminisce and go back to some of the highlights of my life, really. The whole month, that 27 days was the highlight of one of the biggest highlights of my life. And it was great running it back with you. A fan of the show, a fellow fan of the show. Hope to listen to more of your podcast. Maybe we have another season and I'll play a game that's a tiny bit different, but smarter as well than last time. And then I'll listen to you guys analyze that as well. That'd be nice.
Sibu, I would love to see it. I would love to see you come back. In fact, I demand it that one day we see you play again as a different version of yourself, but still with all the things that we know and love about you. So thank you so much for coming onto the podcast to chat with us. And where can people find you on social media as well before you go?
Oh, my word. You know, I'm not active. I think it's... I'm sorry. I'm really not active on social media anyway. I don't even know my handle now, Shannon.
Okay. Let me check on TikTok. You know what? I'm going to give the handles for you and Bukhle at the end of this podcast. So I'll do that. And then maybe if you put up a baby picture, everyone can see it.
Okay. Yes, please. I'll try to be active there as well now. At least I have a little bit more time now than I did the past few years. So I'll get back into it. But yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Sibu. Have a good day. Thanks for coming on to chat with us. Bye. Yes.
Have a good one. Bye.
Bye. Bukhle, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast to talk to me. I know that this interview is about 7 years too late, but we really appreciate you coming onto RHAP.
It's an absolute pleasure to even get the invite after 7 years. I was not aware that in Australia you guys have the Survivor screened now at this late stage, 7 years later.
Well, this one we found it through some more nefarious means than it being on TV, but we did seek it out. We'd heard it was a great season, but I have to say that it exceeded my expectations. And obviously, in recapping it, we have to talk to you. You came second, you're a finalist, you played a really interesting game, and I'm so excited to get your thoughts on your season.
Yeah, so it was such an absolutely amazing time to be in Survivor. For me, the entire experience was so real, you know. I think even just starting from casting for the show, entering the show and applying, not in my wildest dream did I think that, you know, I would be one of the top 20 finalists in the country. It was actually my daughter that had suggested that, you know, Mom, I think you've always said you wanted to do Survivor, and I think this year this is the time for you to actually finally enter. And kind of the pressure from there, I remember filling up the forms, not really knowing that I would make it through. And when I did make it through, I did not have really a game plan and a strategy. It was just mostly trusting my instinct. During that time, I had gone through quite an intense spiritual personal development type journey. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe part of why I did not have the strategy was maybe also just applying the principles on what I was learning with my spirituality.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people say that going in too rigid can definitely backfire as well. But I love hearing that it was your daughter who put you forward, because we've heard stories before on Survivor South Africa that it's often the castaways' children who prompt their parents to go on. Had you been much of a fan of the show before you went on it?
Funny enough, I think I just watched a couple of seasons when the show started. I kind of lost, not lost interest. You know, life happens, mm-hmm. and I got a bit busy in between. Up until obviously the franchise came through with the South African production, and we had our South African franchise of Survivor. I remember watching the first season because the winners was one of my home girls from KZN, KwaZulu-Natal here. So it reignited the interest again. But I think by season 3-4, I also, you know, kind of lost interest because there was quite a lot in my life that happened until obviously because there was a break between mm-hmm. season 4 and season 5. I think there was a 2-year gap. So when then season 5 was kind of promoted, that's when now my daughter was a little bit older and understood where I was, and that's where I then decided, okay, if you believe that I should enter, I did, and I entered.
Yeah, well, getting onto the beach, the first thing is that obviously the theme was a little, maybe you hadn't seen as much, but it was unorthodox, obviously, to have these sports captains there. And
the
you
champion.
Had, yes, very, very unique. And you had an evolving relationship with Mark Fish, which we'll talk about. But what were your initial thoughts on just having captains there? Did you think that helped or hindered your game?
I think it had a bit of both, but I think for me it kind of was a little bit of it's not a distraction, but it did add an element of just this unorthodox Survivor where over and above just having to deal with your other contestants, there's also this game with the captain, because you cannot ignore the fact that you have to have some form of relationship with this captain. So it kind of worked a little bit against just the mindset of understanding what the game is all about. But once we got into the island, and then you start interacting and you develop kind of a relationship with these guys, they become part of the game. So I think when you look at it from that perspective, it then became a part of just having another contestant in the island, just different, because obviously there is no game between us and the captain, but it was a little bit of an interesting twist.
Yeah, I mean, your relationship with Mark Fish was one of the most pivotal relationships, I would say, between a captain and a player. He ends up giving you two Salvation Cups. He votes for you to win. But towards the beginning, he is signing you off to go to the Fire Challenge as one of the two people who's going to go soon. How did that relationship evolve? Obviously, we saw he was very impressed that you did so well in the Soccer Challenge, that being his sport. But, like, how did it go and get so much better, it seemed, over time?
I think maybe it was a mirror somehow of just the how his life has developed over the years. I mean, he came from quite a lot of adversity, and maybe just looking at me and thinking initially that I wasn't going to make it. It's maybe just having to look at face value at people before you can actually get to know them and find out their core, their beliefs and what makes them. I think that relationship, even today, we kind of still keep in contact now and again. It developed into something greater than just meeting a contestant in the island. So I just thought that with everything that I think I present as someone who's not really that strong. Which is why probably he sent me through to the Fire Challenge. But in hindsight, I think that assisted me quite a bit. I think the history of where we come from in South Africa, I grew up in the deepest rural areas of South Africa. So having to make fire, fetch firewood, going through to get water in like a well or a river. So I grew up with that. So that was kind of like second nature to me. Mm-hmm. And so I found it quite easy to make a fire. I think maybe it was just the flint and just not having matchsticks, which is what I was used to. But I think because I know the routine, it became quite easy. And the Soccer Challenge, I grew up amongst boys. Mm-hmm. So growing up, I would be the only girl in the soccer field playing with boys because mm-hmm. I had 9 cousins. So I was like the 10th player of the family. Mm-hmm. So I think also that kind of impressed him and solidified, obviously, the relationship when I did as well as I did. And then going through to the end, yes, I think he was quite impressed, because I think my game was not in your face, if you know what I mean. I really did try to stay in the radar for as long as I can, because that's just basically what I believe life is about. How you interact, you get what you give. I don't know if that makes sense to you. In life generally, if you're going to be out there and wild, the universe also gives you wild. You receive wild back as an experience of life. So I don't really like ruffling feathers a bit. I just like to keep in my lane and make sure that I stay on course with kind of the things that make sense to me. And that's how I believe the game for me was played. I knew that there's a lot of people. I mean, a million rands is a lot of money at stake. And the people that were part of the contestant, everyone had their mark on that million rand. And I think when in life you focus a bit too much on the outcomes, it makes the experience, I think it shortchanges the experience, because you then rush things because your concentration is getting to that particular outcome. So for me, playing the game the way I played it, it was mostly just internalizing and taking in every single experience in the island, especially taking the fact that I can't swim.
Yes.
I still don't swim. I swim in the swimming pool. I don't drown, but that is as far as I can, and making it as far as I did in Survivor, with 50% of the challenges being on the open sea, I was also impressed with myself, you know?
Yeah, not being able to swim definitely might be a hindrance, but you were definitely the fire queen, as you mentioned, that was something that came naturally to you. So the roller coaster experience of being chosen to go to the Fire Challenge because you were seen in this way, because of how you were presenting, obviously Mark Fishley, and maybe learned a lesson there and not judging a book by its cover and kind of seeing more layers to you throughout the game. But then you win the challenge, which is so exciting. But then a lot goes on with the net and the clue. So can you take us through what you remember of that kind of roller coaster experience and having to vocally call out to net at that tribal council? That was a lot of drama quite early on in the game.
Yeah, I think as part of the game, that there is a lot of deception that happens, and my relationship with Sonet, it didn't take off in the friendliest way, and the little that I remember, I know that. She had, I think it was probably genuinely thinking that I have the clue, and maybe sharing it with everybody else. I thought, you know, that's just was her way of playing the game. But for me, having played and having had a target on my back that early, because the assumption was that I've got an immunity, it did kind of make me a lot more aware, because I knew that was what everybody was thinking. But I think, you know, in hindsight, I think that it was just merely Sonet just obviously playing her own individual game and trying to survive as much as she can in the game.
Obviously, you're put together there in an unfortunate circumstance of being called the next two to go, and everyone's just trying to survive from there. But in the more positive realm of relationships, your relationship with Solly and with Val, two people who vote for you to win, who you have a relationship
yes.
with from so early on, can you talk a bit about why you were so close throughout the whole game? What connected you to each other?
So Val reminded me a little bit of my younger cousin. So I'm the only child, and my mother has older siblings, my uncle and my aunt. And I have quite a close relationship with my cousin. So there were elements of Val that reminded me of this younger cousin. She really did struggle with the game. Very early on, she and I would have our little chats and conversations, and she would tell me that, no, Buhle, I don't think I'm going to make it. I had no idea this was going to be so hard. And I think our tribe, we were very strong on winning immunity challenges and not losing people. However, we did not really have that much food. So if you think around being out in a totally different environment and being hungry, was quite a bit that Val was carrying. I think I tried to be strong for her, because I think for me, when I went to the island, I knew that the food element was going to be quite a serious one. So I trained myself with 2 weeks of trying to see how much or how less food I can take, so that I'm kind of training my body and my mind and just my whole psyche on how I would react in the island without having food. I think everyone always thinks strategy and you forget just the human behavioral elements that can affect your game. There's very little that you can do when you're hungry. And for Val, I think that we got close because, you know, I would distract her from just thinking about not having food and missing family. And I think for me also, it was maybe just in me trying to support her, it was also just me reassuring myself that there's a bigger game. And the distraction on what is happening back home is not going to assist the game. We need to stay on course and focus and be present on just what was happening. And I think with Solly being a sporting guy, I'm also very athletic. I'm also very sporty. And I think maybe that was also the connection. And I don't know, he had a bit of arrogance, which I think growing up with boys, it was also just a mirror of, you know, knowing how boys and men especially confront the world. He just felt that he could conquer everything. So there was elements of him that were very familiar to me. And I think a very close relationship that I had, but my friend didn't last a long time on the island, mm-hmm. was with Zen. But I think it was just those connections that it wasn't trying, because it was just generally and organically forming relationships that had no ulterior motives. I because I did not have a game plan, it's not like I was trying to form alliances. It just organically happened, you know. So I think Val and Solly also kind of fell the same. It was quite authentic, which is why I think in the end they kind of felt that maybe my game was played as realistically as possible, which is why they gave me their votes.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned your relationship with Zan. He wants to quit the game. He is trying to save you by giving you the flint and kind of making it this threat. And you mentioned that you were that close and you obviously also wanted to leave. What was that experience like in hearing that it was going to be you as a decoy, but hearing from Val that it was going to be you, and then having this, again, quite dramatic confrontation where Zan is trying so vocally to save you only for you to stay anyway?
It was quite emotional, because it was a blindside for me. I had no clue that this was the plan to vote me out. And I genuinely felt quite special, having Zan, you know, plea with everyone to say, hey, I want to leave, and I want to save Buhle. And this is a guy that I think I had met, I don't know, I had less than 10 days. I mean, prior to going to the island, there was no interaction between us. It was just eye contact, you know, traveling, and having then starting to have a relationship under the circumstances that we had. I just felt very, very special that this is what he believed. Our connection was that strong. And funny enough, we still keep in contact on social media. He's not in South Africa. I think he's living in the islands somewhere. He's always posting very lovely pictures, and I'm very, very jealous. But I think I really did feel special that, you know, we were able to have that authentic connection that developed in such a quick succession. I think we were hardly in the island for 5 days when he decided, you know, he wanted to save me, and I really did feel quite special.
Well, speaking of your relationships, you get to a swap and meet some new people, especially your relationship with Altof was something we saw throughout the show. You do tell him that he's going to go home later on. What were some of the new bonds that you were making that were important after the tribe shuffle?
Yeah, so it was you know, when we swapped the tribes, I think it did kind of distract me a little bit. The fact that, you know, I develop quite strong friendships, and I keep those friendships. The fact that now we had to now find new friendships, for me, it weighed a little bit on me, because I was not ready to start that journey, especially under those circumstances in the island. And I think with Alta, when we started, you know, getting to talk and getting together, because I think what doesn't, what people don't see is a lot of time that we have it on our hands in the island. The little bit of the challenges that the viewer get to see is obviously, you know, just snippets here and there. But between there and what happens in the island, there's just a lot of time that happens. So we developed quite a lot of relationship. I mean, a very strong relationship, because he is from Durban. Durban is in the same province that I was living in. So there was a lot of connecting dots when we would, you know, be reminiscing and maybe remembering life outside of the island, that made that relationship quite strong. I think the fact that he was also Muslim, and just that strong sense of spirituality with him was also, I think, a big plus, because there's quite a lot of parallels when you think about the spiritual journey. So that made our relationship quite easy to just develop. And I think just the game now, getting back into the game with all of that connection, I just, because I knew the one thing I wanted not to do was to deceive people on the person that appears on the show to the person that I am. I truly believe in honesty, and I truly believe in saying what you mean. So when I found the information that the plan was to vote him out, I kind of felt obligated to share it with him, even though I know that that's not what how the game should be played. That's the whole point of the game. You outwit, you outplay, you deceive, you do all of these things. I knew that was against the game. But I think just my personal principles about life compelled me to let him know that, listen, this is the plan. Whether you want, I don't know if there's a decision that you want to make now, but I can't stay with this information and not share it. And yeah, I think that was the reason why I told him that the plan was to vote him out. And his reaction, that was a surprise. I mean, having to spill all the rice, mm-hmm. so that, you know, we left with no food now. I was okay, mm-hmm. right? But I mean, you can't dictate how someone reacts when they receive information, whether good or bad. You can never expect that people are going to react the way that you want. It was a big surprise for me, and there were elements where I thought, you know, it's a bit on the selfish side of town, because now everybody else is suffering, you know, and thinking at that late stage that, you know, because you are not happy and everybody else suffers, I just thought, but I never held that against him. That was his prerogative. He felt that was his rice. He won it so he can spill it. And the rice was spilled.
Yeah, definitely.
If you know what I mean.
An unfortunate part of the game. To go to a more positive time, at the merge, you, Solly, and Val were in quite a power position. You had your new Celoton alliance who you end up voting with, and then you had some old relationships, maybe some negative relationships with Shane, Marion, and a connection with Sivu as well. It seemed quite clear-cut mm-hmm. that you were going to go the way that you did and you end up voting against Shane and Marion, but was there much of a decision in your mind about the way that you would go?
Yeah, it was very clear that, you know, especially Shane and Marion, they played the game quite hard. They were quite ruthless. And for me, it was just funny because that's how life plays out. When in the end, they kind of needed us to make an alliance. And for me, whenever I take a decision, I'm always very clear cut. And I consider quite a lot before I can come to make a decision. So, there was no other way that I was gonna, be voting with them.
Right.
I just knew that no, those two will never be a part of me. I think the deceit and obviously seeing that they are in the game and they would do anything and do whatever it takes to stay in the game was the major reason why I could not trust them, which is why the decision was not to be in their alliance, even when they asked us to.
Mm-hmm. And that's a powerful vote. Obviously, Marion does go home. But the next vote, Solly gets blindsided. And that's, you know, a bit of a fall from that power. What was your game plan after that? Obviously, being now on the bottom, Solly's gone home. You're completely exposed with him gone as a shield. What were you hoping you could use at that point to get you to the end?
So it was a very interesting twist when he went, because I totally had no clue. I was also blindsided. Mm-hmm. I felt like it was a blindside for Solly and myself. So I think that's when I kind of upped my game a little bit. I saw that it then required me to kind of play an individual game with the relationships that had developed and obviously not having those people around me. You're right, I did feel exposed. And that's when I kind of started maybe changing a little bit to kind of make sure that I survive. It was a surprise for me that I was actually still in the game at that stage. I think that was when I was the only female left in the game, I think.
Soon after, the next round when Moira and Val go. Yeah, then it's just you.
Yes, I was the only female that was mm-hmm. left in the game. I think there were 7 of us. So the exposure, feeling exposed mm-hmm. was a little bit elevated and heightened at that time. So I drew a lot from just my experiences having lived with boys and always having to prove myself. So I think mentally that's when I decided that, you know, I need to be quite vigilant and make sure that even in my state of playing the game under the radar, I still am quite aware of just the conversations that were happening on the island and making sure that I stay in the game for as long as I did. And I think I saw that Sivu was quite popular, and there were elements where I felt that in as much as he was genuine with his story, I think he also kind of milked it a little bit in his favor to kind of stay in the game, obviously having the background that he did. And just his appearance, he was quite skinny, you know, he didn't really pose that much threat. So I knew that between me and him, you know, I would really need to be quite careful because he had quite a lot that benefited him more than me, you know what I mean? So, I think that's when kind of my game was a little bit stepped out a bit. There were instances where there would be opportunity for information that I would be sharing, and I would hold back a little bit, and use it at a later stage, you know. So I think at that time it my game kind of was a little bit changing, but not that drastically, and in so much as maybe starting to lie and being dishonest. No, but I think I was quite a lot more aware and vigilant in the game.
Well, you talk about playing more individually from now, and this double tribal council night is a big night for you. Moira goes, then Val goes, and you win immunity in the middle of that. But a big talking point from that night is that at the first vote where Moira went, you voted for Val, and then when you win immunity, you go back to voting for Graham. It's something that came up at the final tribal council where she asked about it, where you said that there was basically you couldn't save her, so there was no point just sticking with her if you couldn't help her. What can you take us through what that was behind that vote?
So I think my relationship with her and having carried her for that long in the game, I think mentally I saw what it was doing to her, and she it. I wouldn't say 100% that she had given up, but I think also just the connections that she had made, having had fallen out of the game, was the big motivation behind me deciding that I'm going to vote for her, because whether she had stayed on in the island, I knew that she would be ultimately the next person that gets voted off. And I think I did say to her that it was very funny. I think when on that day of the double vote, when we got into the island, I think you guys remember we obviously jumped off the plane into the sea, and on that day, she had high heel shoes on that right. got lost at sea.
Oy.
On that day, her shoes washed offshore and she found them together.
Oh,
and I just thought that was quite, I just thought that was quite bizarre. These are shoes that when we touched shore, I mean, when we came onto the island, that got lost at sea, and for them to wash offshore together, I don't know. I just thought it was symbolic. She also felt that it was symbolic, and for her, she said, "I think this is a sign for me that, you know, I need to gather all my things. It probably it's time to leave." I think in a joking way, but I think for me, when I kind of internalized and looked at what it means ultimately was that maybe this is the end of her game. Here are her belongings coming off from the sea. Maybe it's a chance for her to kind of finally say, this is it. This is where my game ends. So I think in the end, when then she questioned my motivation in voting and putting her name down, I just kind of felt, well, I don't know, we've been talking, and when I was also honest and told you that I was going to put your name down because I think you're not as strong as you can. You're not going to be able to see the game through. So it was quite interesting. And funny enough, I think she and I are still friends. And she said, you know, in the end, it was just a game. I needed just to understand and ruffle your feathers a bit.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember why you, because it was the double, obviously. So do you remember why you voted for her first and then switched it to Graham when you had immunity? Or was it just you didn't want to maybe, you know, rub salt in the wounds by making it two votes in a row in one night for her?
I think I had then found out about Graham and his obviously influence behind most of the blind sides.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was quite instrumental in getting Soli out. So I guess that was a little bit of me saying, okay, you got one of my friends out, I'm going to get you out.
Mm-hmm.
And I also just felt with Moira, I think Moira genuinely thought they had a close relationship with Graham. And for me, it was more a scare on just how manipulative, I mean, it's a game. Yes, it's a game, but maybe using a term as manipulative is quite strong because it's a game. But I think for Moira's sake, the fact that the whole day, on the day that he had orchestrated blindsiding Moira, they were very close in the island. They had time together. They would be away from just the crowd. And I think they looked quite solid. So it gave me quite a scare. And this is why last minute I changed my vote to Graham.
You mentioned your relationship with Sivu. Obviously, later in the game, it becomes very important, especially at that Xavion vote. Early on, he's also connected to your group but doesn't vote with you at the Killarney vote. So can you just talk us through a little bit more about that relationship and how you know, were connected to him at points, but with quite big gaps, I feel, in that relationship as well?
Yeah. So I just felt that I was quite honest and authentic with him. there was quite a lot of similar connections from just our background on how we grew up, and when we would have our talks in the island, he kind of felt like a little brother to me, and I kind of trusted that what we shared was you know, not cast in stone, but I think it in my head it had quite a lot of value, and I thought he would take it that way, and obviously playing the game, there were instances that I would kind of excuse him and say, maybe, you know, this is why he's voting for the people that he's voting for, this is why he's playing the game the way he's playing it. But I think in the end, when then it came to us coming together with Xavier, and it was quite clear, and I liked the fact that he, well, kind of orchestrated and played on just what had been portrayed of him in the game, and he was quite a good actor, so mm-hmm. I had to play along and recognize, because I think Xavier never really thought that, you know, as the assumed weaklings of in the island would literally be the guys that are behind his demise and leaving the show. So that solidified it for me, and that's why we had to do what we did, and we voted Xavier off. And I think in the end, then I think we were left, the three of us were left in the island, top four. I think it was David, Sibu, Graham, and myself.
Mm-hmm.
There was quite a nasty exchange between Graham and Sibu. And I think also David was, I don't know, I've never seen anybody that lucky. and I think, you know, when it came to the end and he was kind of trying to get in between myself and Sibu, that also, you know, put a spin on things, and I think Sibu was true to his word and stayed on with just the connection between ourselves and the alliance between myself and him.
Mm.
But outside of that, I mean, the game got very interesting in the end.
Yeah.
I think I did get a little bit intimidated in the end. I think, well, it came to the crux of the game. There's only four people in the island now, and there needs to be a top three. I'm this close. I never thought I was going to get to the end. So it hit me that, you know, this is it. And I think just a little bit of deception here and there that got me a little bit weak. It's what happens in life, you know. If you lose your eye on the ball, there's always going to be opportunities for undercutting, for, you know, gaps and all of these things. And this is why I think my David moment in the island was a reflection of, you know, I don't know why I thought maybe Sibu would be a threat, but I think in the end, it was an individual game, and there's top three, there's R1 million at stake, and I did get a little bit compromised.
I mean, look, this is a Strategy Survivor podcast. That is like the least bad thing you can do, according to us, is turn on a thread right before the final tribal council. And that made a lot of sense. And we commended you for that instinct. Was it all about that threat level? Because on the show, there was some mention about him making plans without you at that final challenge, about him making the big speech, that very individual speech at that idol play. So was that what prompted it, kind of that individual game coming out and the disconnection in your relationship? Or was it really all this guy might take votes from me in tomorrow's final tribal council and there's R1 million on the line, or was it a combination of all those things?
It was a combination of all of those things, and it was also just how it was at stake, R1 million. I think it's down to that, the fact that, you know, here I am at the end of this game where I never thought that I would come through to the end. And here is the guy here who I thought was in my camp, and I'm finding out that obviously they had been all of these stories that were happening behind my back that he was orchestrating. So that played a huge element in it all. But I think it was interesting. And obviously having to plea at the end for the vote, you know, the pact that was made with Marianne, and it was very interesting, and it just shows that you can never truly say that you know someone or put your head on the line and say this person will never do this to me. You know what I mean? It was a true reflection of that for me. When all of that was revealed at the end, at the last tribal council.
So getting to the final tribal council, did you think that it had gone well? Did you come out of that thinking you'd won the game?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Because I think the twist at the end was obviously the relationship between Graham and Altav. I thought with Altav's outbursts and the Rice story, that would definitely be the game changer between just the Salitan alliance, because they were quite close with Graham. So I thought Altav's vote was going to come my way.
Mm-hmm.
I already knew that Vel, Solly, and obviously with the captains, I was the remaining member of Mike's tribe. So I had counted that, okay, these are potentially the votes that are coming my way. I think the twist with just what the relationship between Sivu and Marianne and the pact and obviously that whole speech in the end on Marianne giving the vote to Sivu. Sivu is the one that deserves it. And only to find it that in the end it went to Graham.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a twist for me, because I literally thought it was in the bag for me.
Right. Because if you had gotten Altov's vote,
yeah,
but Sivu had gotten Marianne's vote, you would have won 4-3.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I can see how that would be a lot.
Yeah.
So what was it like watching it back, obviously in the hope that you had won, having to sit through a whole reunion before you knew, and then obviously finding out that unfortunately you've come second?
Listen, there's another twist to it that I think the viewers were not aware of. So David and myself used to stay in the same suburb. So when the show was aired back in the country, we would have like occasions where we'd make a big hoo-ha, we would invite friends and obviously watch it all together. For some reason, I don't know why, David carried on playing the game outside of the show. He literally, I knew that I also had David's vote, because when we were back home, when we would be watching with my friends and everyone, he would lie through his teeth and say, listen, girlie, I voted for you, Bushe. My vote went with you.
Mm.
And obviously up until the end, that's when I saw that. But I mean, here you were with me and my friends. We were watching you there. With your family, I would go watch with you and your friends, with your family, and you consistently carried the same story that you voted for me. So it was quite a huge surprise that, you know, I just did not understand his motivation, because in the end it was going to be revealed. You know what I mean? That, you know, who he voted for. And yeah, I think it was just an interesting fact to confront, that, you know, there are people like that truly in life, that will just be by your side for absolutely no reason about anything that has to do with you. It will just be their own motivations, you know what I mean? And finding out, obviously, that I didn't win was also just a bit of a downer, because I thought, you know, for the first time, maybe the game needed someone with kind of a strategy like myself, because it's not every instance in life where you have to be deceiving, you know, where you have to always be looking out over your shoulder. You know, your life is not that important. You know, people's motivations are exactly that, people's motivation. But as long as you stay on course with what you truly believe in, you know, you can really get far in life. I thought that was just what I wanted to get across in the show. And that kind of gave me a little bit of confidence when I then looked at everybody that, you know, potentially would vote for me. And I think the solidifier was obviously the David story outside of the game, you know. So, yeah, it was a very interesting season.
Yeah, I'm sure that must have been really disappointing. Speaking of your type of gameplay, we got a question from a listener. Laura Brown Jones wanted to know, do you feel like the edit of the show truly showed your gameplay?
No. No, it didn't. There was quite a lot of instances. I think at the end of it all, it's a game. They are certain characters that need to come out. So the edit portrayed me not really as the person that I was. So I just did not feel there was true justice when it comes to that. It's the production at the end of the day. So they needed a certain way that would make sense for the show. And they had a certain vision that they wanted for the show. So I guess in the end, that was what was priority over and above just what and how I played the game.
Well, that was all 7 years ago, obviously, and now we have the opportunity to ask what life has been like for you since, what you've been up to, and what it's been like to be a Survivor finalist for the past 7 years.
Yeah. So it's been a very interesting life post Survivor. I am still in the event production space. I started really getting involved in cycling after the show. The passion with cycling started when I was small, but I think being a fitness fanatic, I would be, you know, in spinning classes for days. And then I decided to buy a bike and ride. So I took cycling quite seriously. I have an NPO, a nonprofit company now, and an advocacy group. I think we all know the history with cycling. It's quite a wide sport. And I am a big driver in South Africa with the inclusion of black cyclists and black clubs. So I run that NGO. I have moved into big events. I work with one of the biggest festivals in the country, a music festival, music, food and lifestyle festival. I'm with the production team there. I take care of artists. I have done artist management. I managed Portia Monique. Portia Monique is a US-based R&B vocalist. She had a stint where she stayed in South Africa for 2 to 3 years. So I managed her. We did quite a number of songs with local artists, a number of collaborations. I have a property, cycling events that take place in quite three of the affluent malls in the country, or malls or shopping precincts. I don't know what you want to call it. I received nominations, obviously because of the cycling work that I do. I think now with COVID, my business took quite a knock because obviously of the regulation and just the prohibitions around having spectators, mass gatherings, and that's at the core of my business. So life has been quite challenging recent time, and it's just because of the pandemic. But I think post Survivor, there was quite a lot of opportunities that came my way, and I benefited quite a bit with being on the show.
Well, hopefully we've been able to put a little bit of that back into the spotlight, and I love that you're using sports for good. I feel like Mark Fish would be so proud of that. So that really ties in so well with the theme of the season. Is there any way that our listeners can check out on social media what you're doing and follow along with you?
Yes. So my foundation is the National Cycling Academies Forum. And we are on social media as NCAF_SA. And that is on Instagram, quite big on Instagram, Twitter, and on Facebook. And that's a lot of the advocacy work that I'm doing with profiling and promoting riders of color. And I have a national property with cycling events, cycling races. And that you can find on social media as, or our website page, National Criterium Racing. So it's www.criteriumracing.com. And then you get to find out just about all the events I host in cycling. And I also did launch in 2018. I launched one of the highest ranked UCI sporting events in the country, still cycling. And it's the Tour of Limpopo. If you can Google that, you'll find it on YouTube. And just the delicious festival. I don't know. It's one of the, we actually wanted to expand into Australia. And one of your bands from Australia, they were from Australia when we hosted the Delicious Festival, and I got to speak with them. And they wanted to do the collaboration with Portia Monique at the time. And yeah, I mean, there's quite a lot. I think if you just search Kuhle Madlala, there's a lot that comes on with the work that I have done after the show.
Well, that sounds absolutely amazing, and kudos to you for really doing something meaningful and important in the 7 years since. But Bukle, it was such an honor to talk to you, get a little bit of a glimpse inside your game after recapping it, and thank you so much for coming on to talk with us.
Thank you for the opportunity, Shannon. It's wonderful for me to know that, you know, the work that I have been doing has expanded and is still indelible in people's minds as far as Australia, where you guys are from. And I'm really grateful, and thank you for the opportunity.
You are so welcome, and thank you so much for coming on. Okay, everyone, there you have it. I hope you enjoyed both of those interviews. I know I learned a lot about both these amazing people, characters, and players on Survivor, and I'm really happy I got to finally watch their game and to talk to them. It's been so fun. I've really enjoyed covering the season, and this is the last time that you guys will hear from me talking about Survivor South Africa Season 5. Of course, you do have the podcast coming out from Mike with Xavion and Marion, so it's not the last of our coverage, but it is the last for me. I just want to give out some of the handles, because Booklet gave out a lot of professional stuff, wanted to make sure all her personal social media handles were there, and as Sugar said, he couldn't remember what his social media handles were. He's not on it a lot, but we'll put out the handles just in case he ever feels the urge to post. So Booklet's Twitter is BUHLEMADLALA, Booklet Madlala on Twitter. And then Instagram is BOOHLE.Madlala, MADLALA. And then Sivu's Twitter handle, again, he made Twitter because we were doing the podcast, so he really hasn't been on it a lot. But just in case, it is SIVUYILEXABANI1 on Twitter. And then on Instagram, where he hasn't posted in a couple of years, but again, just in case, it's Sivu008X on Insta. I'm going to probably be tagging that when I share it, so that might be a good way to get it. So thank you to both of them for giving the time 7 years later to tell us all about their game. It is so appreciated. As always, check out the interview with Graham as well, that deep dive where we got a lot of insights as well. So next you'll be hearing from me on the recap side of things, I guess, will be Survivor South Africa Season 8. We have so much pre-season content coming up. Make sure you're subscribed to the International Survivor Wrap-Ups feed. There is so much pre-season stuff to come. And also, if you want to be involved in the community, the discussion, some ways to watch, you want to become a patron of RJP, I think, in the lead up to Survivor South Africa Season 8. In the meantime, for me, I do have some game theory stuff coming up. The last one I did was the mathematical game theory principles, where we did reference the season a lot. So check that out. That was with Jacob Sager Weinstein. I'm doing some other stuff. I'm on the RJP Rewind this week with Chappelle and Rob and guest Haley Strong and me talking about Top Model. You can hear my experiences from Top Model and my trauma, which I will now happily dole out for entertainment. So hope you check that out. Follow us at AmyBloomType, at Shannon Gates. As always, we love to hear from you. And please leave us a review or a comment if you've enjoyed our coverage. Please try and send people to the feed and let them know that Survivor is happening very soon in real time, live, International Survivor. They should be watching it and hopefully listening to us. But thank you guys so much. I've said it before how grateful I am to be able to cover this for the community who joins us on this 7-year delay journey. It's been such a good time. Thank you to you guys, as always. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you so much to Steve and Booklet for their time, and I will see you next time. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12
ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give
them the
£1 million.
Million
euro.
Million.
The adventure of a lifetime.
The adventure of a lifetime.
Adventure of a lifetime.